All right, get ready, because today we're diving deep into the world of chemical proteomics. It's kind of like stepping into a crime lab. Instead of fingerprints, we're tracking molecules. You know, the tiny little suspects behind life's biggest mysteries.
Exactly. And our case file today is this research paper called Measurement and Utilization of the Proteomic Reactivity by Mass Spectrometry. You can find it at DOI 10.100002 AMAS.21837.
So basically, this paper is like a guide to understanding how proteins, those workhorses of our cells, react with all the molecules around them, right? I mean, why should we even care about these tiny interactions anyway?
Well, imagine you're trying to design a drug that targets a specific protein involved in a disease. To do that effectively, you need to know exactly how that protein interacts with other molecules. What triggers it, what blocks it, what changes its behavior, you know? That's where chemical proteomics comes in. It gives us the tools to map out all those interactions in incredible detail.
Okay, so it's like knowing the enemy's playbook before going into battle, right?
But how do scientists actually see these interactions? I mean, the paper mentions something called mass spectrometry, but honestly, that sounds kind of intimidating.
It might sound complex, but basically, mass spectrometry, or MS, is a powerful tool that lets us identify and weigh molecules. And we can do this with amazing precision. Think of it like sorting a jar of mixed nuts by weight and then figuring out what each nut is based on its unique mass. In this case, the nuts are the proteins and the molecules they're interacting with.
So it's like a molecular scale can tell you the exact composition of each molecule.
Essentially, yes. And by analyzing these molecular weights, we can figure out which proteins are interacting with which molecules and even pinpoint the specific locations where those interactions happen.
That's pretty remarkable. But the paper also talks about different strategies for analyzing these interactions, like top-down and bottom-up proteomics. What's the difference? It's all about perspective. Imagine you want to study a complex machine. Top-down proteomics would be like looking at the entire machine as a whole, trying to understand its overall function. Bottom-up proteomics, on the other hand, would be like taking the machine apart piece by piece, examining each component in detail.
Okay, so top-down is the big picture view, while bottom-up is more focused.
Exactly. And depending on what they're researching, scientists might choose one approach over the other, or even combine them to get a more complete understanding.
Now, the real stars of the show in this paper seem to be these things called covalent probes. They sound like something straight out of a sci-fi movie.
They're not from a sci-fi movie, but they are pretty awesome. Covalent probes are like tiny molecular spies. We design them to infiltrate cells and report back on specific protein interactions.
So they're like little tracking devices for proteins.
Yeah, you could say that. These probes have three main parts. First, there's the reacting moiety. That's the part that actually attaches to the protein we're interested in. Think of it like the spy's grappling hook latching onto its target.
Okay, so that's how they get a hold of the protein. What about the other parts?
The second part is the reporting moiety. It acts like a signal flare, allowing us to easily detect and isolate the protein the probe has attached to.
So it's like a beacon saying, hey, I found the protein you're looking for.
Exactly. And finally, there's the recognizing moiety. It makes sure the probe only interacts with the protein we want. Think of it as the spy's secret password, preventing it from attaching to the wrong target.
Wow, that's a lot of engineering in something so tiny. But the paper also mentions different types of covalent probes, reactivity-driven, and proximity-driven. What's the difference?
It all comes down to how they find their targets. Reactivity-driven probes, or RDPs, are like general-purpose detectives. They can react to a wide range of proteins. It's like casting a wide net in their search for clues. They're great for exploratory studies when we don't know exactly what we're looking for.
And proximity-driven probes, those sound more like specialists.
Exactly. Proximity-driven probes, or PDPs, are designed to target very specific proteins. They're like detectives with a specific suspect in mind. They use their knowledge of that protein's structure and location to zero in on their target.
So it's like having a molecular GPS that guides the probe directly to the protein of interest.
Great analogy. PDPs are really powerful tools for studying specific protein interactions in detail, especially in complex cellular environments.
This is all so fascinating. It's like we're peering into this hidden world of molecular interactions.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what about those molecules that don't have those handy reporting moieties, you know, those signal flares that make them easy to track? How do scientists study those interactions? It seems like trying to solve a crime without any fingerprints or DNA evidence.
That's a challenge that researchers are working on right now. And it leads us to a fascinating area of study called protein adductomics. It's like forensic science for the molecular world, where we investigate the traces left behind by these elusive molecules.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. But before we dive into the world of protein atomics, let's take a closer look at some of the specific examples from the paper. You know, the ones that highlight the power of these Kavalin probes.
Great idea. One example is a method called OxyCat. Scientists use it to study how E. coli bacteria respond to stress. You see, understanding how bacteria deal with stress is crucial for developing new antibiotics and for fighting antibiotic resistance.
So they use this OxyCat method to like track how the proteins in E. coli change when they're under pressure. Kind of like seeing how the bacteria's defenses get activated at a molecular level.
Exactly. Using OxyCat, researchers were able to pinpoint those specific proteins in E. coli, the ones that get modified when exposed to hydrogen peroxide, a common stressor. This information is so valuable for understanding how bacteria develop resistance to antibiotics and for designing better treatments.
That's incredible. It's like having a front row seat to the microscopic battle between bacteria and our immune system. Speaking of battles, the paper also mentions these IA alkyne probes being used to map out the reactions of an anti-inflammatory molecule called etaconate in macrophages.
Etaconate is a fascinating molecule. Plays a key role in regulating inflammation, which is involved in so many diseases, from arthritis to heart disease. By using IA alkyne probes, researchers could identify exactly which proteins etaconate interacts with in macrophages. This helps us understand how it works and could potentially lead to new anti-inflammatory therapies.
Wow, so these probes aren't just for basic research. They have real-world implications for developing new treatments. But the paper also mentions how even the structure of a Kavalin probe can affect its reactivity. They found that probes with a specific type of linker were more reactive with proteins in living cells. It's not just about what you attach to the probe, but how you attach it.
Absolutely. It's a testament to the ingenuity of these chemical biologists. You know, they're constantly refining these tools to make them more effective and precise. For instance, they found that probes with an aliphatic linker were more reactive with protein thiols in intact cells compared to probes with a hydrophilic PEG linker. This deep understanding of probe design is crucial for getting accurate and reliable results.
So every little detail matters when you're working at the molecular level.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the story of this clickless IADTD probe, which sounds like a major upgrade.
It is. Click chemistry is incredibly useful for attaching those reporting moieties to probes. But those extra steps can sometimes be a pain. The clickless IADTB probe streamlines things. It incorporates a special type of reporting moiety that makes analysis simpler and faster.
The paper mentions this probe was a game changer in a high-throughput drug screening study. Researchers were able to quickly analyze thousands of potential drug candidates and identify the ones that could suppress T-cell activation, which is essential for regulating immune responses.
Exactly. By combining this clickless probe with a technique called TMT labeling, researchers were able to find promising new immunomodulatory compounds that could potentially treat autoimmune diseases or prevent organ rejection after transplantation.
Okay, we've been talking a lot about these fancy probes, but I'm still curious about that challenge you mentioned earlier. Analyzing proteins modified by molecules that don't have those easily traceable tags. How do scientists even begin to unravel those interactions? It's like trying to track a ghost.
It's tricky, but that's where protein atomics comes in. Remember, it's all about analyzing those modifications that happen naturally within cells, the ones without those handy tags.
Right. It's like forensic science at the molecular level, looking for clues to understand the impact of those hidden modifications.
Exactly. And one of the key tools in this field is, you guessed it, mass spectrometry. By carefully analyzing the masses of proteins, researchers can detect even the tiniest changes, the ones caused by these tagless modifications.
But how do they find these modified proteins in the first place if they're basically invisible? It's like finding a needle in a haystack.
Well, researchers have come up with some clever strategies. One way is to focus on specific proteins that are known to be highly reactive with various molecules.
They're like molecular hotspots for modifications.
Exactly. One example is human serum albumin, or HSA, which is the most abundant protein in our blood. It acts like a sponge, soaking up all sorts of molecules. By studying HSA, scientists can get a snapshot of the types of reactive molecules we've been exposed to.
So it's like a molecular history book, recording our interactions with the environment.
Another protein they often look at is hemoglobin, the protein that carries oxygen in our red blood cells. It's especially susceptible to modification by things like air pollution and tobacco smoke.
Analyzing these proteins sounds like a clever way to learn about our exposure to harmful substances. But what if researchers want to study modifications to other proteins? Not just these super abundant ones.
That's where it gets more difficult. They can use targeted MS methods to look for specific modifications. But that only works if they already know what they're looking for. For finding new, unknown modifications, they need a broader approach.
So what do? Cast a wider net.
Exactly. High-resolution MS lets researchers scan for a wide range of modifications, even the ones they weren't specifically looking for.
That sounds like it would create a ton of data. How do they make sense of all that information?
It's definitely a computational challenge, but bioinformaticians have developed sophisticated algorithms. They can sift through all that data and identify the signs of protein modification, helping researchers pinpoint those needles in the haystack.
Incredible. It's like having a molecular detective partner helping you analyze the evidence. So we've covered analyzing proteins modified by both tag and tagless molecules, but I noticed the paper spends a lot of time talking about those iodoacetamide probes, or IA probes. Why are those so important?
IA probes are like the workhorses of chemical proteomics. They're incredibly versatile and have been used for decades to study protein reactivity. They're really good at targeting cysteine residues, which are known for their high reactivity, and involvement in tons of important biological processes.
The paper mentions that these IA probes have gone through like a fascinating evolution over the years. Can you walk us through some of the key advancements?
Sure. Early IA probes were pretty simple, just an IA group attached to a biotin molecule. This let researchers label and isolate cysteine-containing proteins. But it wasn't very quantitative.
So how did they make it more quantitative?
That's when isotopic labeling came in. Researchers started using stable isotopes, like heavy carbon or nitrogen, in their IA probes. This let them compare the amounts of labeled and unlabeled proteins, so they could measure changes in protein reactivity under different conditions.
So it's like giving each protein a unique barcode.
Exactly. And this innovation led to techniques like OxiCat, which we discussed earlier.
Right. Using those isotopic tags to see which proteins in E. coli were being modified under stress, what other improvements were made.
Another big development was the introduction of alkyne groups into IA probes.
Ah, those alkyne groups. Perfect for click reactions, like those molecular grappling hooks that let you attach other molecules to the probes.
Exactly. IA alkyne probes let researchers use click chemistry to label and isolate modified proteins with even greater precision.
The paper highlighted some cool examples of this, like using IA alkyne probes to map out the reactions of attacinate in macrophages.
Yes, and then we have the IA DTB probes. They've become super popular in recent years. DTB is a biotin analog that binds less tightly to streptavidin, making it easier to release and analyze those captured proteins.
So it's like a better version of the original IA biotin probes.
Exactly. And one of the best things about IA DTD probes is that they can be used in a clickless workflow, which simplifies the process and can make it more efficient.
Right. We talked about that clickless IA DTB probe used in that high throughput drug screening study. It's amazing how those tiny molecular tweaks can have such a big impact on research. But we focused a lot on IA probes, which target cysteine residues. What about probes that target other protein nucleophiles?
There are definitely probes out there that can target other nucleophiles. One example is probes with NHS ester warheads.
NHS ester, that sounds familiar. Didn't we talk about that in the context of protein painting earlier?
You have a great memory. It involves labeling lysine residues to study protein structure and interactions.
Right. It's like using molecular paint to highlight specific parts of the protein.
Well, NHS ester probes can be used in a similar way to study protein reactivity. They can react with a variety of nucleophiles, including lysines, serines, threonines, and tyrosines, giving researchers a wider view of the reactivity landscape.
So instead of just one color of paint, they have a whole palette.
Right.
But I imagine there are some drawbacks to using these multi-reactive probes, right?
Yeah, there are some trade-offs. One concern is selectivity. Because these probes can react with so many different nucleophiles, it can be tough to figure out which specific interactions are happening. It's like trying to listen to just one conversation in a noisy room.
Too much noise, hard to get a clear signal.
Exactly. Another issue is toxicity. Some of these really reactive probes can be toxic to cells, so it's harder to study their effects in living systems.
So it's a balancing act between reactivity and specificity when you're designing these probes.
Absolutely. Researchers need to carefully consider these factors when choosing a probe for their experiments. Speaking of balancing acts, the paper really emphasizes the importance of finding the right balance between reaction selectivity and adduct detectability.
Okay, break that down for us. What do those terms mean?
So reaction selectivity refers to how specific a probe is. Ideally, we want a probe that only reacts with the protein we're interested in and nothing else. Adduct detectability refers to how easily we can measure the product of the reaction. We want a probe that produces a strong signal so we can be confident in our results.
So it's about making sure the probe hits the right target and leaves a clue.
Precisely. But here's the thing. Sometimes increasing selectivity can make the adduct harder to detect.
So how do researchers solve this problem?
It's all about optimization. They carefully choose probes, adjust concentrations, fine-tune their experimental conditions to find that sweet spot between selectivity and detectability.
Sounds like a lot of trial and error.
It can be, but that's the fun part of scientific research. Constantly pushing the limits and refining methods. And talking about refinement, the paper also highlights how important it is to properly characterize modification products, to understand the details of these proteomic reactions.
Okay, tell me more about that.
Well, remember how we talked about top-down versus bottom-up proteomics, those different ways of analyzing proteins?
Yeah, top-down is looking at the whole protein, bottom-up is breaking into pieces.
Right. The way we break up those proteins or peptides can affect our ability to identify and find those modifications. Traditional methods can sometimes give us incomplete data, especially for those tricky modifications that are not very abundant.
Like trying to solve a puzzle with missing pieces.
Exactly. Luckily, we now have new fragmentation methods, ones that give us more complete and informative data. Techniques like photodissociation and electron transfer dissociation can generate unique fragment ions that help us pinpoint those modifications much more accurately.
It's like having a magnifying glass for molecules.
Exactly. These advances are essential for fully understanding those complex proteomic reactions.
We've discussed selectivity, detectability, and characterization. But what about those clickless probes we talked about earlier? The paper seems to suggest they could be the future of chemical proteomics.
They definitely have the potential to change the field. Clickless probes offer a bunch of advantages over traditional clickable probes. For one, they simplify the workflow by eliminating those extra click reaction steps. Less time, less effort, and less chance for errors.
And since you're not adding any extra molecules, there's less chance of interference or contamination, leading to cleaner and more accurate results.
Absolutely. It's a win-win.
But are there any downsides to clickless probes?
One potential issue is sensitivity. Clickless probes can sometimes be less sensitive than clickable probes, meaning we might miss some subtle interactions.
So it's a trade-off between sensitivity and simplicity. But it sounds like the benefits of clickless probes often outweigh the drawbacks, especially when you consider the potential for automation and high-throughput screening.
Definitely. Clickless probes are paving the way for a new era of chemical proteomics, faster, more efficient, and capable of tackling even more complex questions.
This is also mind-blowing. We've learned so much about chemical proteomics, from its beginnings to its exciting future. But before we wrap things up, I'm curious about your thoughts on the broader impact of this field.
I believe chemical proteomics can change the way we understand biology and medicine by showing us how proteins and the molecules they interact with work together. We can gain insights into the mechanisms of disease, develop more targeted therapies, and even personalize medicine based on an individual's unique proteomic profile.
That's an amazing vision for the future. I'm sure our listeners are imagining the possibilities. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's take a break and come back for the final part of our deep dive.
We'll explore some more cutting-edge developments in this field and discuss those interesting questions that are driving researchers to push the boundaries of what's possible.
Welcome back to the final part of our chemical proteomics journey. It's been quite a ride so far. We've seen how scientists are using all these amazing techniques to map out these complex interactions between proteins and other molecules. It's like unlocking the secrets of some tiny city, bustling with activity at the microscopic level.
Yeah, and in this last part, we're going to look into the future of this field, where researchers are pushing the boundaries to develop even more powerful tools and tackle those big questions.
I can't wait to hear what's coming next. The paper talks about increasing sample throughput, decreasing costs, enhancing sensitivity and selectivity. It sounds like a chemical proteomics wish list.
It kind of is, but researchers are definitely working on it. One exciting area is microfluidic devices.
Microfluidics. That's like shrinking a whole lab onto a chip, right?
Exactly. These tiny devices let researchers manipulate and analyze samples with incredible precision, using super small amounts of reagents and generating a ton of data. It's like a mini chemical proteomics factory.
So it's all about making things smaller and more automated, faster, cheaper, and more efficient.
Exactly. And this doesn't just increase throughput and reduce costs. It also makes things more sensitive and selective. By controlling the reaction conditions really precisely, Inside these microfluidic devices, researchers can get rid of background noise and boost those weak signals from those low abundance modifications.
It's like getting rid of static from a radio, so you can hear the signal clearly. The paper also mentions needing better ways to analyze a wider variety of protein nucleophiles.
Right. Remember all that talk about IA probes and how much they love cysteine? Well, cysteine is definitely important, but it's just one part of the story. There are so many other nucleophilic residues in proteins, you know, the ones that can be targeted by small molecules, and we need new tools to study them.
So it's like expanding our toolbox with specific tools for each type of nucleophile. That way we can better understand how proteins interact with everything around them.
Exactly. Researchers are busy developing new probes and strategies for targeting those less studied nucleophiles, like lysine, serine, threonine, and tyrosine. This will give us a much broader view of protein reactivity and open up exciting new possibilities for drug discovery and development. Imagine designing drugs that target very specific nucleophiles involved in disease.
That would be incredible. So we've talked about probes and techniques, but what about directly analyzing those tagless molecules? Any progress there?
That's the ultimate goal in protein adductomics. It's a tough one, but researchers are making progress. New MS-based methods, combined with powerful computer programs, are paving the way for direct analysis of those hidden modifications. It's like developing night vision goggles for molecules, so we can see those interactions without needing tags.
Wow, that's a great way to put it. Sounds like chemical proteomics is about to make some huge leaps forward.
I think so, too. Chemical proteomics has the power to change how we understand biology and medicine. By really seeing how proteins and molecules interact, we can uncover the secrets of health and disease. And this will lead to new and better therapies, and even personalized medicine based on each person's unique molecular makeup. Imagine a future where treatments are designed just for you, super effective and with minimal side effects.
That's an amazing vision. It feels like we're entering a new era in healthcare, one that's all about understanding ourselves at the molecular level.
Yeah, and it's all thanks to the scientists who are constantly pushing the boundaries. Their work is paving the way for a future where we can treat and even prevent diseases in ways we never thought possible.
Well, that brings our deep dive into the world of chemical proteomics to a close. I hope you've enjoyed exploring this incredible field with us.
And remember, this is just the beginning. There's so much more to learn and discover in the world of science.
Keep those minds curious and those spirits adventurous.
Thanks for joining us.